We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Selection Sunday is almost here, folks. Another Friday edition of College Sports Now, so we're talking women's college basketball. Most of the major conference tournaments were last weekend, but we have the Big 12. We have some bid stealers coming this weekend, and joined as always by her Hoopstats, Megan Gower. Megan, you feel it. Selection Sunday's near. How's the whiteboard doing?
The whiteboard is doing well. It also is ready to be retired for the season on Sunday.
How are you as well?
This time of year is always the busiest.
Yes, the whiteboard shouldn't be first. How are you?
Good. Busy, good. But good.
A lot to get to on today's show. We'll be joined by a guest, ESPN's Alexa Phillip, who does a great job as a national writer. Formerly covered Stanford, covered UConn, covered a lot of different places. Knows the game about as well as anyone. Megan, where do you want to start? I mean, we can kind of go conference by conference like last week. Actually, I'll make the decision. I kind of want to start with one seed talk, because last week I thought was very indecisive for a lot of teams. You know, South Carolina shockingly won the SEC. Indiana is probably locked into a one seed despite their unfathomable collapse against Ohio State in the Big Ten. But then those last two spots are up for grabs. You have Virginia Tech in there. You have Stanford in there. You have Iowa in there. Maybe I know you think UConn still has an outside shot as a one. So there's a lot to decide, even though there are no games to be played until Sunday, a lot of resumes to be picked through.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I can't really remember a time recently where we're like, who's going to be on the one line. I feel like that group's kind of usually decided that you're like, okay, where does everyone else fall? So it's an interesting time to be looking at it. But yeah, conference tournaments. I mean, you have teams like Virginia Tech and Iowa that made these really impressive runs and that are going to get rewarded for those. And then, I mean, a team like Stanford, which I thought almost looked a little bit similar to what UConn looked like over the last month, ignoring this weekend over in their kind of closeout of the regular season. Obviously, a little bit better competition for them, but they were still struggling quite a bit. And then UConn gets AZ FUD back. How does the committee handle that? I think that's the real reason they're on the outside of that one is, well, what do you make of this team now that they have FUD and all of those losses came without AZ FUD? So it's a different picture now when you've got a player that I think all sides pointed to being a national player of the year type candidate when she was playing earlier in the season.
So we can go kind of case by case here. If you look at her Hoopstats ratings, South Carolina is far and away, they're in a different galaxy than everyone else. Correct me if I'm wrong, they're 54.4 rating. So if you took, 100 possessions, they'd be 54 points better than the average team.
Yep.
Then the next closest is Stanford at 41. So South Carolina, according to the fancy math algorithm, is 14 points better than the next closest team. So obviously they're in a different stratosphere than everyone else. But Stanford, We can start with them. Fell in the Pac-12 semifinals, ultimately won by Washington State. We can talk about the Cougs when Aletza comes on, because that's an incredibly fun story. But what do you make of the Stanford overall resume now? Not necessarily, if you want to talk about their loss last week, feel free, but 28-5 on the year, second in their hoop stats ratings. They're still fourth in the net. So make their case for or against a one seed.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their overall body of work and kind of ignore how they've looked over the last few weeks, they have a really good case for a one seed. They've got one of the best resumes in the country. They're 9-3 against the top 25 in the net. So that's impressive. There's not many other teams in this group that we're going to talk about that have that kind of strength of schedule. I think the thing that's holding them back is that last 10 games. They're 7-3 in those last 10 games. You've got that Washington loss that's really puzzling in there. They lost to Utah to end the season. And in that road trip with the loss to Utah, it also took them two overtimes to beat Colorado. And then you've got the loss to UCLA in the Pac-12 tournament. So a team that has a really strong resume, but maybe if you look to like the eye test and just how they've looked down the stretch here, it's not great.
I agree with everything you said. So we'll keep it with a team that I think, if you just copied what you said and pasted it, with the exception of how they looked at their conference tournament, I feel like UConn has a very similar overall case as Stanford here.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think when you take Stanford's resume and then put UConn's next to it, you can basically like draw a line between all of their losses and say like these are basically equal. Their resumes are almost identical. I think the thing that's different for UConn is how do you factor in that, okay, but AZ Fudd didn't play in those games. That's not a question that you're asking about Stanford right now. And I think that's why you're seeing the question, could UConn end up in the one seed? I don't think I would put them there, but I think there's an outside shot that they make it there because of that, that they get that kind of big boost back in getting AZ Fudd back. And then they looked the part too in the conference tournament. I think that's important, not just that they got her back, but they looked the part running through the Big East tournament.
Sure, and picked up what is quietly a top 12 victory. Villanova was ranked, what, 10th or 11th? So and they did it comfortably. The 12-point margin was a little bit deceiving. It wasn't that close. UConn, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to quite get back up to a one seed, but they're going to be. The big thing is always, you know, if you're talking one seeds, two seeds, three seeds, avoid being the last two seed. Avoid being the first three seed. LSU gets to avoid that because I don't. Would they put them in the same bracket?
They can't. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember where the line was. Yeah. I think it starts with the top four lines can't be from the same conference. Right. So congrats, LSU. Yep. They're not going to be a one seed, but we can quickly talk about them. You don't think they're going to be a two seed?
Yeah, I think they're going to fall to the three line, and they're a victim of one, the fact that they lost in the conference tournament. I think their losses are going to hit them a little harder because they just don't have the great body of work to back it up in terms of like the big statement wins. And then also they're just a victim of all the teams kind of behind them making good runs in their conference tournaments and moving in the correct direction.
Do you know how many wins against current top 25 teams LSU has?
Are we talking top 25?
Like this week's top 25 Associated Press poll?
One win over Tennessee, right?
That is accurate. One win, and technically Arkansas was ranked when they went to Bud Walton Arena. That looks like January and put a hurting on the Razorbacks, who might not make the field. So that doesn't really count. So LSU, their chances of a one seed are over. Blew a 17-point lead in the second quarter onward. It wasn't that big at halftime against Tennessee. Second largest comeback win in SEC history. So congrats to the Lady Vols, who picked up a signature win and then fell to South Carolina. But we're talking one seeds. So Virginia Tech. This is a team that no one really talked about. They were just kind of lurking there 10, 11, 12 for pretty much the whole season. And then suddenly last month, whatever clicked and boom, they've been on a meteoric rise to suddenly, I think they could be that fourth one seed.
Yeah. They're 10-0 in their last 10 games. They've just been kind of rolling since, I don't know, early February. They've just seemed to figure it out. And that continued in the conference tournaments. I think the thing that stood out to me about them and their conference tournament runs is, I forget the exact number, but I think their biggest margin of victory in the ACC prior to the conference tournament was 13 points, and then they won all but the championship game by significantly more than that going into the ACC tournament. They're now up to 10-2 versus the top 25 in the net, so just kind of quietly and then very quickly built out a number one seed type resume.
Yeah, they beat Duke in the regular season by 16. They beat Florida State by 14. And otherwise, you're right, nothing bigger than 14 points against the teams that you would expect them to take care of. Even some of these teams that you'd expect them to beat by more. Pitt, only a 7-point loss. They lost to Clemson. So a couple of confusing losses, but they really turned it on. You're right, a 26-point win over Miami. They held Duke to 37 points. Boy, the Blue Devils really struggled scoring offensively. I thought that NC State game might have turned the corner, and said they've regressed mightily since then. And then, yeah, an 8-point win over Louisville in the championship game. And the Hokies surging now. They've won 10 in a row. Might sneak into that last one seed. Other teams to make a case. Maryland's. Actually, no, we'll talk about Iowa first, because the Hawkeyes repeated as Big Ten tournament champs, and they did it going away.
Yeah, I think this was an impressive run as well. I thought Iowa to be in the one seed conversation because they were on the three line in the last reveal was going to have to do something fairly special in the Big Ten tournament. And then I think we saw that they picked up that win over Indiana to end the regular season and then beat Maryland in the Big Ten. And then a large win, I think is a nice way to say it, over Ohio State in the Big Ten final really just blew out the Buckeyes from the start of that game. And I mean, Caitlin Clark was fantastic. And I think, did she get the triple-double? She was at least near it if she didn't get it. But yeah, she got the triple-double. So yeah, a team that as of late looks like one of the best teams in the country, which I think we do see the committee value conference tournament games a little bit more. So I think they're definitely going to be on the rise. They don't have maybe quite as good as the full resume as some of those other teams that we talked about so far, but still a really solid resume and a team that's very hot. And also playing in the Big Ten, which I think we see the committee value in the number of top 16 teams that we've seen from the Big Ten.
Whether they're a one seed or a two seed, has your opinion on Iowa changed? Because you and I have been on the same boat of, it's great that they can go in games where they, you know, score 105 on Ohio State or 105, but the defense, you know, they beat Indiana 86-85. They beat Maryland 89-84. They told Purdue under 60, and, you know, they needed it because they didn't score 70 in that game. In a game, the Boilermakers, that's more of the Boilermakers liking. But has your opinion on Iowa changed because of this run?
No, I don't think it will change. It just, like, I think they look better because it's not just Caitlin Clark and it's not just Monica Sonato. They've gotten contributions offensively from all of their starters, and I think this team is better when they do that. But no, they still can't play enough defense to go to the Final Four. You have to play defense and rebound well to win in March, and I'll stick to that.
All right, so we're on the topic of the Big Ten. Maryland's, it, you know, I think the consensus was the Terps had that four seed. If they probably reached the semis, lost a good semi, or if they reached the championship game, I should say, the Big Ten, instead they fall in the semis. So can you make Maryland's case for or against being a one seed?
Yeah, I mean, their body of work overall is good. I think we saw that, and again, like I said, the Big Ten, we've seen that the committee clearly feels strongly that the Big Ten is a solid conference. A lot of teams in the top 16. This is a conference that's really difficult. I think without that win over Iowa, though, it was just going to be hard for them to get into that one seed. And then I think the other thing that hurt them is part of what was boosting their resume since that last reveal was a win over Ohio State, which maybe after that Iowa game just doesn't look quite as good as it did, you know, a week ago. It felt like Ohio State had maybe turned a corner, and then they kind of go out and really struggle against Iowa. So I think that says something as well. I would be kind of honestly really surprised if we see Maryland on the one seed. I'm not saying they don't have a case, but I just think that they're kind of maybe the last team in this group I would expect to see end up on the one line.
more so than Utah, who I think is the last team that has even considering
Utah in the conversation. So yeah, no, not more so than Utah. I think they've got a better shot than Utah, but I wasn't considering Utah as someone with a case for a one seed.
You make the case because they were the fourth one seed.
That's fair.
During the last bracket reveal. And then since then they beat Stanford and then fell to Washington State. And Alexa will join us here shortly. And she wrote a great piece on just the fanaticism around the Cougs and Shania Twain. But I'll let you, you know, I know Shania is your girl. I was going to see her in June of 2020. I was going to take my wife to Vegas to see her. I'm indifferent. But then the novel coronavirus 19 knocked that out.
Yes.
But Washington State, this is a great story out of the Pac-12. They were going to make the tournament anyways. They win as the 7 seed. They might be seeded better than that now in the tournament because of this run.
Yeah, I think they've got a good shot at a 6 type seed with the run that they made through the Pac-12. And I'm also a giant Shania fan. I am actually seeing her this summer. I'm very excited about it.
I live in North Carolina. She's in Greensboro one day and she's in Raleigh in the next. And my wife, she might be in Charlotte, whatever. It's either way, it's two drivable things. I think she wants to go to both. I don't want to go to, like, she's going to listen to this and I'll go to one, Nicole, but two, you know, if you want to go to the second one, feel free. We're talking Washington State and Shania Twain, and that's perfect segue to our guest, ESPN's Alexa Philippou, joining us. Alexa, you just wrote a great story on Washington State and this Shania Twain connection. A great story coming out of Pullman. Thank you for the hard-hitting journalism, first of all. And just, you know, how great is this Washington State story and the fact that, I mean, not only are they singing Shania Twain, like they're friends now, it seems.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's kind of taken on a life of its own, which is pretty remarkable. But having come from the Pac-12 myself in college, the fact that like this Washington State team has emerged to be, you know, tournament champions, and now, you know, they're getting Shania. I hope that she gets them out into, you know, her concert in Spokane. It sounded like that's what they were trying to finagle, and I fully support that. I hope they get to go on stage with her and sing Man, I Feel Like a Woman. That would just, if that happens, like, forget about, you know, a deep tournament run. Like, that's when you peaked as a program, right? So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch from afar, and I hope people, I know it's hard to watch Pac-12 games, but I hope people like know more about the team, and whether or not it's through the whole thing with the song and Shania, or just, you know, obviously because they're a good basketball team and they're definitely one to watch when we get the tournament started.
Yeah, I know everything, people generally view things through a football perspective, but just putting into context how hard of a job that is in Pullman to get people there. Spokane is 90 or so minutes away, so it's a very difficult job, and Kami Etherjanko have done a great job there. So the Cougs are in the tournament, but Alexa, I want to talk to you about some of these top teams in the country. It seems South Carolina, obviously, they're South Carolina. Indiana looks fairly locked in as a one seed, despite some of these, despite their second half collapse last week. But, you know, Megan and I were talking before you came on. Who do you think is deserving for those final two one seeds? Because there are a couple of teams in the mix, which hasn't been the status quo historically in this tournament. We generally know who the one seeds are.
Oh man, that's why they pay Charlie the big bucks to try and figure this out, because I have no idea how you determine it. You know, up until recently, I would have been like, well, Stanford should be a shoo-in, but I'm also a Stanford grad, so I feel like I'm very reactive to like their highs and lows. But like recently I've been like, well, they haven't been playing like a one seed, but their resume is more deserving of one. So I think I'm being a little harsh on them, but geez, yeah, I don't know. If you're a Stanford fan, then I think you want to see some improved play than what we saw over the last few weeks from them. Iowa, I'm still trying to figure out how much I feel like their recent surge is like, how much do you pay attention to that versus like trying not to be prisoner of the moment? Because we just know this Iowa team, it's like, when they're good, they look like they're the best team in the country or one of the best teams in the country. And when they're bad, when they don't play defense, or when they're not hitting shots, you know, or when they're not getting anything from the role players. And, you know, it's not as much that. I've been a huge fan watching Virginia Tech from afar. Right now, I think Charlie has them as one of the projected one seeds. I just think the way that they closed out the ACC season was really remarkable. And I just think the coaching job Kenny Brooks has done there is, I mean, he's on the top three in the coach of the year conversation to me. I just think he's done a remarkable job. And then, Maryland. Maryland's another team where it feels like when they're really good, when they're playing defense, when they're getting contributions from other people besides Diamond Miller, they look really good. And then sometimes when they're not, it's just hard because these teams this year, I feel like you're getting like almost like Jekyll and Hyde. Like one day they look amazing, another day they look horrible. And horrible is a strong word, but and then the thing is that's, you know, living in Connecticut, like I watch a lot of UConn. I think if they didn't go through the stretch they went through in February, they would clearly be that, you know, they would be a number one seed, but I don't think you can totally ignore that if you're the committee. Because are you going to do that with other teams? I don't know. And then you add back AZ FUD. So clearly they're going the right direction. They looked a lot better in the Big East tournament. So I have no idea what they're going to do. Because I think there's a lot of teams that are deserving. And then if you look at their actual resumes and whatnot, or if you're going based off of most recent play. So Megan's a bracketologist. So I've seen what she's thought. She's been great at giving us updates on Twitter. But I think it's really actually exciting that there'll be a little bit of intrigue, but maybe the point is there's no right answer. They're just going to make the decision that they think is best. So
sounds like you don't want to be ever on the selection committee ever in your life.
No, I hate making decisions. I hate like having takes, making decisions. No, I could not be in the selection committee ever.
Well, you know Stanford and UConn probably better than most. So starting with Stanford, what do you make of them? I know you mentioned the kind of their stretch lately, but the talent is there. They just haven't had the smoothest maybe last month or so.
What do I think of Stanford? Such a loaded question. Yeah, their offense has been really tough to watch at times the last few weeks. And, you know, I'm a huge Cameron Brink fan. I think she's great. And I don't think she's really been the problem. But sometimes it just feels like they don't get anything outside of Cam and Haley. And Haley too hasn't been, you know, the most efficient, or, you know, I don't know if it always even goes down to her though, because yeah, it just feels like sometimes they're not, they have so many different pieces. I've always kind of struggled with this, especially with the last few years. It's like, they have so many pieces. It sometimes is like, okay, well, like, how do I want to phrase it? It doesn't always seem like everyone has like an established role, or, you know, like everyone's getting the most out of their role. I do think that Lauren Betts, I love that she's playing more and that they have that option now to put her in with Cam Brink. I think that's a really good wrinkle that could help Stanford like through the tournament, but, they're struggling a little bit more than I thought they would. I think, like, I know they've graduated a lot of really good talent, but I always think back to that game last year in the national semifinal when they lost to UConn. And yeah, I think if they can come through with like grit and like a toughness in the tournament, I think that would really serve them well. I thought that was kind of what was lacking when they played really badly against UConn. It was like UConn just like out-tough them. So that's one thing I'm looking for, especially when you don't have like the holes to bring that, or like Anna Wilson to bring that, like who's going to bring that for the Stanford team.
Megan and I were talking, if you took away the jerseys and just kind of just did like a blind resume, Stanford and UConn are very similar. You know, they both go through stretches where they don't pass the eye test. You wonder what's going on offensively. Does your view on UConn, though, change with AZ Fudd's return? She didn't look great, but she looked rusty. But UConn looked a lot more UConn-like last week.
I think it has to change. I mean, if she's on the floor, regardless of whether or not she's making a ton of her shots, like, she's automatically a floor spacer who's going to give Aaliyah Edwards and Dorca Juhas more room inside. So, and I thought it was notable, Gino said that she'd only really practiced twice with the team before the tournament. So theoretically, I know she's been doing individuals outside of that, but she'll be getting more and more comfortable, like, in the offense and in, like, kind of game scenarios. playing live ball. So I wouldn't necessarily read. And I think maybe the beauty of it is, of the way that UConn is now, is like they might not need her to score 20 points a game, especially not in the first two rounds, maybe not even in a Sweet 16 game, because of the way that Aaliyah Edwards has been playing and Dorga Juhas has been playing. And, you know, they have Lou Lopez Seneschal, who's been great. So, I mean, I do think they're going to need her in the tournament at some point, because it's going to, you know, I always think about how Gino says, like, some games it's like you just need to have that like transcendent player to like push you through, kind of like how Paige was in that Elite Eight game last year. So at some point they might need AZ to hit like three threes in a row in the fourth quarter or something like that, but she has time. So I wouldn't be surprised if the committee, you know, is really going to take that into consideration, because it's no coincidence that UConn's really tough stretch happened without AZ, and you know, that period when they're still kind of over relying on their starters and everything like that.
Another team that made a big run last weekend, Iowa. You kind of mentioned that they've kind of been up and down as well, but what are your thoughts on the Hawkeyes in terms of, you know, just last weekend change, how you feel about their chances in March?
Yeah, I think I probably feel more, I'm more high on them than I was a few weeks ago, but I also, it's like, you know, they can kind of flame out if like, you know, like almost as easily as if they, you know, as if they're able to do all this stuff. Like Caitlin Clark obviously has been incredible. To me, I think, you know, if their role players, their contributors are able to be impactful, that's what really makes them dangerous. And if they're doing well on the defensive end, obviously that's kind of like always been the question with this Iowa team, is that can they play enough defense to get like deep into the tournament? So I don't have the stats in front of me, but I remember one of the games, I don't know if it was the semifinal or the final game, it might have been the semifinal. It was like Warnock and Marshall and like Kate Martin, like they all had it was like one of the games in the tournament. It was like the first time all season or something like that, that all five starters were in double figures. I don't remember the exact stat, but it went to show, I think that's arguably when Iowa is at its best, because it can't just be on Caitlin Clark or Sinano. So if they can keep that rolling, then yeah, I think that they're going to get to the second weekend and have, you know, a much deeper run. I would be so fascinated to see an Iowa-South Carolina matchup. Like, I don't know. I just think that would be, like, the whole women's basketball world would probably implode because of, like, the narratives and everyone's fandom and everything. But, yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do. I think, though, I mean, if you're an Iowa fan or whatever, like, you have to do better than, you know, I know they had a tough matchup in Creighton last year, but, like, they can't have a repeat of that again. Like, this team needs to make that step, even though Caitlin's going to be back another year. But so last year, all five starters will be there. You got to make that step. And I don't know what that means, but that is certainly one of the more intriguing storylines I think we'll see in the next few weeks.
Caitlin Clark might have two more years. She floated a couple of weeks ago.
Good.
That's something to talk about next year. You mentioned South Carolina, and a matchup with Iowa would certainly be spicy. There's so much parity, it seems, between teams 2 and pick your number 10, 11, 12, which it's deeper than it has been. But then there's this behemoth at the top that just head and shoulders looks better than everyone else. Ultimately, do you think anyone beats the Gamecocks?
I think they're going to go undefeated and win it all. I wouldn't be shocked if they lose, but if you had a corner me right now and say what is going to happen. So I made the mistake last year of thinking they were going to lose, because I thought their offensive struggles would catch up to them, and that just like did not happen. And then obviously their offense is actually better this year, and they don't have a perfect offense, but they don't have a lot of the same problems, I'd say. You know, they're not necessarily like a offensive juggernaut, but they're scoring and they're shooting percentage is up, and they have depth and all this stuff, and they're still playing defense, and they're still dominating the board. So I, right now, if you had asked me what's most realistic, I think they're going to repeat. Cause I also think what's notable about them is even when they've been down this season, they've still managed to come back, and they just have that maturity and poise and experience that I think will carry them through to another championship.
Do you have a couple of like wild card teams that aren't in that top group, maybe like 4, 5, 10 seeds that could make some noise when we get to the tournament?
Well, I just wrote about South Dakota State recently, and I'm like fully on the South Dakota State bandwagon now. I did this last year with, I forget what it was. I thought like IUPUI was going to make a little bit of noise, and then they lost in the first round. So like maybe my opinion is just going to be off again, but South Dakota State, they might be like an 11 seed in Charlie's bracket. I can't remember right now. They're pretty low in Charlie's bracket, but I think that they are a team to watch because last year we had South Dakota make a pretty good run. So I was like, well, why not, you know, their Summit League rival, someone who's already played a bunch of Power 5 teams. They beat Louisville. I'd be keeping an eye on them. They have they have a really experienced coach. They won the WNIT last year. So that's my wild card of all wild cards. I'm really intrigued to see how there's like a few teams I'm intrigued by from like the 4 or 5 range, like Tennessee. Are they going to be able to build upon what they are able to do in Greenville? Like, that's my big question for them. Cause I kept expecting them to like, okay, like their tough schedule, all their ups and downs, it's finally going to pay off in this moment. And I was like, okay, is that beating LSU in the SEC tournament semifinals, or is that going to be even something greater in March? I don't know, but they have the talent, you think, to make some sort of run. And then I'm really intrigued by, well, I know like Texas has had a lot of injuries recently, so I don't really know what to make of them. I think they kind of like had high expectations and then like struggled. They got Rory back, so now they're like doing better. I'm really curious to see how they do in the Big 12 tournament, but also again, their injuries, like Sonia Morris. I don't really know what her deal is, if she's going to be playing in a few weeks, but I'm not sure if the injuries are going to like hamper a run, but I wouldn't like count them out per se, because Vic Schaefer obviously knows what he's doing in March. And then, you know, Megan, I have to bring up UCLA. Very curious to see what, I don't really quite know what to make of them, because they had obviously a really good Pac-12 tournament, but they've kind of been up and down too. So I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, they make some sort of run. You've got Charisma Osborne and Kiki Rice, but I don't know. I don't know if you have any strong thoughts on the Bruins. You did predict though that if Stanford lost, or Utah lost or something, that you predicted they'd win. So you were pretty close. You were seconds away.
Yeah, it was close. Not quite there, but close. Yeah, they're an interesting team because they have so many freshmen that it's like, it's so up and down. And it's like, if they can string it together for a few games, they could make a run.
Yeah, right. But regardless, they'll be in good shape, I think. You know, the youth indicates that they'll be in good shape in the years to come. So this could be good experience regardless.
I just checked Charlie's latest update. 1:15 this morning. The man's grinding. Love it. South Dakota State would be a 10 seed in Iowa City if they follow him. That would be a spicy second round matchup. Wow. Alexa, you going to Greenville or Seattle for the regionals, or neither?
I think the plan is for me to be in Seattle. I haven't booked a ticket yet, so should probably get on that.
Well, have fun. Anything coming down the pike in terms of, obviously you're going to be grinding yourself over the next few weeks. Plug your stuff on ESPN.
Yeah, so right now I'm in the middle of writing about, last year I wrote about every team in the bracket, and then I was like, I can't do this alone. Someone help me. So thankfully Vopal and Charlie are helping me out. But yeah, we're writing about every single team. I'm doing like probably 2/3 of it. So in the midst of that, but I'm also writing about UConn and just everything they've gone through this year, which was said last year, but somehow it got worse from last year to this year. So that story, I think, is coming out next week before the tournament starts. And I think that will, it's going to be interesting going through, because I was even thinking about how like, oh yeah, like remember when Gino took like 4 games away, like to kind of deal with this stuff. And I was like, wow, that feels like, 5 months ago. I was like, no, that was like not that long ago at all. So there's been a lot that's happened this season for UConn, and it'll be interesting to go back, look back at it, but see kind of how far they've come in a way, and figure out what that means for the future.
Awesome. You can follow her on Twitter at Alexa Philippou. Alexa, thanks so much for the time. Great stuff.
Thank you. See you guys.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Our thanks to Alexa Philippou of ESPN. Megan, before we turn our talk to the one major conference tournament this week, the Big 12 is underway in Kansas City. Any other loose ends you want to tie up from last week? We hit on most of the major conferences, at least the champions, but boy, I'm looking back at what we guessed. We both got Virginia Tech right. I got AZ'd. I picked Villanova in the Big East. You picked UConn. We both picked Indiana in the Big Ten. That looked really good for 20 minutes. By the way, I know Ohio State got blown out. Does J.C. Sheldon's return from injury change your ceiling for the Buckeyes at all?
I think they're a better team with her on it. I've kind of been an Ohio State doubter all season, even when they were doing really well. The thing that concerns me about that team is just if you can break their press, which I recognize is not an easy thing to do, but teams know it's coming now. And if you can break their press, their defense outside of that press is largely non-existent, I think is a fair way to put it.
Sure. The rebounding gets me. I think they're still, if they don't have a negative rebound margin on the year, it's awfully close. And if you just run into a team with moderate size, that might be the end of them. Cause again, if you're going to be a two seed and they'll be one of the higher up three, maybe four seeds. They could get stuck in South Carolina. They can get stuck against, Tennessee, LSU, run into any of those teams. It might not matter if you force 19 turnovers, if you get hammered on the glass, especially against a team like South Carolina. So I'll generally agree with you. And then Tennessee, where do you have the Lady Vols seated? I understand they've played the toughest schedule in the country. They finally got a top 25 win, and they're ranked this week. They should get rewarded for playing a tough schedule. But we've talked a lot. LSU is overrated. They dropped precipitously, considering they lost to what teams consider or what media members consider a top 25 team. They fell drastically. I don't quite get why Tennessee is on the 5 line. They haven't won.
I actually have them on the last team on the 4 line right now. And I think it comes down to the strength of schedule that they played. And then the fact that when you get to that group at the bottom of the 4 line, like quite frankly, no one's resume is
sure
that impressive. Like you're talking about a UNC team with 10 losses and like, I don't know, like I think Tennessee's, even though they don't maybe have some of the statement wins, like the schedule that they've played is more impressive. And those losses have, like they fell out, I think 11, right? But those losses have come to better teams. They've played South Carolina twice. They've played LSU twice. They've played UConn. They've played Ohio State. Like it's a long list of teams that are at the top. Indiana, there's a long list of top teams that they've played. And another thing that for me kind of set Tennessee ahead a little bit is just that, like, if you're looking at what's happened recently, and I think they're a better team now than a lot of those losses they racked up back in November. And they're clearly a better team, I think, now than they were in November.
I will say, I know Rekia Jackson is the leading scorer. I love Jordan Horston. She is 6'2". She plays like she's 6'5". She jumps out of the gym. She scores, she rebounds, she can pass, she can block, she can steal. She stands out on the floor in a pretty good conference in the SEC, even with, she's playing with another lottery pick next to her in Rekia Jackson. She was on the court with, some of the best players in the country in South Carolina, and she stands out just physically in what she can do. So she's going to be the high draft pick as well in a couple of weeks. So that's our kind of putting the bow on conference tournament week from last week. We've already had a little chaos. We don't have to go too much in depth, but we had some bid thieves so far this week. USF, they're going to go to the tournament, but they lost to Wichita in the AAC quarterfinals. ECU won the auto bid, first time since like 2007. So congrats to the Pirates. We had another WCC was the bid stealer. Gonzaga, they're going to make it. Portland shocks the Zags in the WCC final. Portland won that in 2020 too, right?
I think so. That so sounds
second,
right.
Second time in 4 years. So congrats to the Pilots. But if you're some of these bubble teams, I know you've had a week off. You're firmly watching, you know, you watch the American, you watch the WCC. You're going to watch Middle Tennessee to make sure they win Conference USA. And they're probably going to watch the Ivy League because Princeton and Columbia, we can kind of break down both resumes if you want. Columbia's 45th. Actually, that's not updated. Columbia is, they're both in the 40s in the net. Princeton is at 40. Columbia is 44. One of them's probably going to get the auto bid. Does the other make it, though?
I think I like Columbia's resume better than Princeton. And I think I've been saying that for a while, but I just like their non-conference is better. So I think if Columbia gets the auto bid, Princeton was one of those teams that's very squarely on the bubble. They could get in, but I don't know. If it goes the other way, Princeton wins, I think Columbia's in.
So that could be a potential bid thief, if you will. And then the A-Sun could also be a bid thief. Florida Gulf Coast, they are 38th in the net. Again, not to say they're going to lose. I don't even know who they'd play in the A-Sun Championship. I haven't looked, but teams are paying attention. If they lose, I think they get in at, it'd be 20. If they were to lose, it'd be 29 or 30 and 4. 30 losses. It's not unprecedented. It's a lot of wins to leave out of the tournament. So things to pay attention to outside of the power conferences. If you just want to stick to the big teams, we do have Big 12 tournament week, tournament play this week. Started yesterday. The quarters are tonight. Texas is the one seed. I don't know how, I don't want to say seriously they're taking it, but they're not at 100%. And Vic Schaefer has already said they're not going to play everybody because of injuries. Oklahoma's the two seed. Texas is flirting with that area to host. I know you tweeted last night that you agree with Vic in that even if they were to be one and done, or at the very least not make the championship game, are they still safe to host?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's like a pretty clear line, I think, right now between like who's a three and who's a four, and they're pretty safely on that three side. So even if they were to drop to the four with a loss, I still think they're in. I can't see them dropping to a five seed.
Do you see who do you see winning in the Big 12 this week?
I'm still gonna go Texas. I still think they're pretty clearly the best team. Even with the injuries, I think their defense could probably carry them some, but if it's not Texas, it's probably Oklahoma.
They have three starters out. Well, obviously Aaliyah Moore's been out. And they have a couple others who aren't playing. Who is not playing? Correct me. Oh, Sonya Morris isn't playing. She hasn't played the last couple of weeks, but she's not gonna make a return. And they basically, Vic Schaefer openly said, we're saving her for the tournament.
Yep.
So a lot of bubble teams as well in the Big 12. West Virginia surging with three straight wins. They were looking like they were on the outside looking in, but then they beat Baylor. They beat Oklahoma State, who's suddenly struggling. The Big 12, I think, is kind of turned on its head the last few weeks because Baylor suddenly lost 5 of 8. Oklahoma State closed the regular season losing 3 in a row. Kansas had a brutal loss last night to TCU. So some of these teams that we thought were out might be in. Some of these teams that we thought were pretty safe, like Kansas, you know, you're the bracketologist here. What do you make of the Jayhawks all of a sudden? Not to say your resume is made by one loss. Boy, that's a really bad loss.
Yeah, it's a really bad loss for a team that was already kind of in that bubble territory, which is not what you want this time of year if you're that kind of team. So I haven't gone through and like fully looked at everyone sitting on the bubble right now, but it's not a good thing for them. They're definitely going to be sweating it out on Selection Sunday.
Absolutely. A lot of basketball to watch this week or last week. Are you taking a little, not to say you're not watching, but is this week a little easier? Are you watching men's hoops as well? Because there's a billion men's games. Like, kind of take us through your week. Are the dual TVs set up? Is that like a staple through April?
Yeah, the dual TVs will stay here till April, but I'll watch the Big 12. I'm going to keep an eye on that. And then I'm a UConn men's fan, so I've kind of glued to the men's Big East tournament a little bit this weekend, as long as they're playing.
It's my understanding you turned it off when they were up 26 yesterday.
I didn't turn it off, but I was, supposed to be working the day job because it was a 2:30 p.m. tip and I was on the couch, the computer, and I stopped paying attention because they were up 26. And then I looked up and I was like, well, what happened? And they were only up 5.
They won anyways. Big East at the Garden.
Yep.
it's definitely different than everyone else. Megan, final thing, follow Megan on Twitter at Megan Gower. Last week, she posted a picture of her setup with her dual TVs and her laptop. And I don't know if there's a tablet in there. What I noticed, you can't even really see it on the screen, but if you're kind of a nerd like me, you noticed not only a Nintendo GameCube, it's the silver GameCube that I had the same one from Toys R Us. Did you get yours from Toys R Us?
Probably. I don't remember where we got it, but it was probably Toys R Us.
Are you still playing it? I mean, obviously, it's
occasionally. Yeah, I mean, I have like Mario Kart in here and stuff, so sometimes I use it when people are over. It's more like I don't play video games enough to invest in a newer thing, so we just keep the old one.
Video games have long passed me by. I have the Xbox One, and I got Madden a couple years ago. Jesus Christ, that's like that's long. It's passed me by. I'm an old man. GameCube. I got rid of my GameCube during the pandemic because it kind of started to die. So we upgraded to a Wii off of Facebook Marketplace. Yeah, I didn't cry, but like it was sad. I spent a lot of hours. So Mario Kart's your game. Anything else?
Yeah.
Mario Party?
I have the old Animal Crossing, like the original Animal Crossing, not the one that's on the DS now or whatever they call the new, the Switch, I think is the handheld thing now.
Got that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else is in there. I honestly like really don't use it that much. I think there is, I don't know if it's Mario, but there's some other Mario game in there. Maybe it's Mario Sunshine, one of the older ones is in there too.
I got it at first video game system I ever bought with my own money. It was $150. I remember it vividly. It came with either Metroid Prime or I got Mario Party 4. And it was far too many of my favorite hours as a child. Have you seen the new, are you going to watch the Mario movie? I saw the new trailer was out for yesterday.
I honestly did not know that there was a Mario movie until the second, so maybe.
It looks fun. Mario, you know what Mario sounds like. We all know what Mario sounds like. Chris Pratt is the voice. It's literally Chris Pratt's voice. That's my problem. Check out the trailer. It's on Twitter. It looks really fun. Like they're incorporating a lot of different things in it. And then you just hear Chris Pratt's voice. It's like, guys. Mario, we know what he like. It bothers me, but it looks fun. All right, Megan, we'll play video games in a few weeks because we got lots of basketball. Enjoy your weekend. Follow Megan at Twitter at Megan Gower. I'm at r_joyce34. Thanks to Alexa Philippou of ESPN for joining us. Selection Sunday, 7 o'clock. The men's at 6.
8 o'clock for the women.
Eight o'clock for the women. 8 to 9 on ESPN. Come next week. Scheduling note, we are not going to record on Fridays anymore because it doesn't make sense. Come next Friday, we're going to be firmly in it. We'll record some point midweek. Megan and I will hash it out, look at our work schedules. But the next few weeks until the national title game, we'll come to you at some point in the midweek. We'll coordinate with the baseball show, with the men's basketball show as well. But it's here. March Madness is here. Enjoy the final weekend. Enjoy the Big 12. Enjoy your mid-major stuff, and we'll talk to you next week.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.